B-Pod Studios.
Felger.
I don't know, guys. Am I going to play? Am I not going to play? What am I going to do?
Mass.
Yeah, Mass, you stupid. S-T-O-O. Stupid Mass.
It's time for Felger and Mass, presented by DraftKings on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
All right, final hour, Felger and Mass, me and Big Jim Murray in our Town Fair Tire Studios here. Reentry Mondays presented by East Boston Savings Bank. Presenting sponsor DraftKings continues to bring us on 98.5 The Sports Hub and the simulcast on NBC Sports Boston. First thing that I read, I actually read it before Bedard, but both made me retch. And not that I'm blaming Bedard for sure. I'm not blaming Andrew Callahan. He's just doing what he has to do. But I certainly feel like this is the team. I certainly feel like his story in the Herald on Saturday is presenting the team's viewpoint on their offseason, their plan of attack this year. And that is basically, in a nutshell, I'll just, without reading it, sum it up for you. Building around their secondary and offensive line. And that's how they plan to win this year. That's how they won last year. And this I will read. If not for injuries to their weapons and waning quarterback play, the Pats were in position last year to contend based on the strength of their secondary and offensive line. And that's their approach this year, which is why they paid Devin McCourty, why they franchised Joe Tooney. And if you look at the middle of their offensive line and their secondary, it's still both those positions, two of the best positional groups in the league, and that's how they're going to contend. What are your thoughts on that, Murray? Is that enough?
No, that column by Belichick. I mean, Andrew Callahan is nothing but pure Pats propaganda. It's a shot at Brady. So fine. I mean, you knew these were going to continue as he is now a quarterback of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But I just don't think that's a good plan because last year the offensive line was a liability, a straight-up liability. And granted, it was mostly because of injuries. But I don't know, like, yeah, I get what they did there in terms of putting the franchise tag on Tooney if you are going to try to protect Stidham, who I do think is going to be the guy going forward. This is how it looks like what they're planning to do there. So that's smart. The secondary was overrated and got exposed towards the end of the year, especially in the last game that cost you the bye. In fact, correct me if I'm wrong, right? Remembering this, Stephon Gilmore, your defensive player of the year, literally got picked on in that game. Was it Devontae Parker that lit him up like a Christmas
tree?
Yes, like,
very good, Murray.
Right?
Yes.
So do you know what you're looking at there? And how about the boogeymen themselves, too, the interior of that defense and the linebackers? They also got exposed, and so it was overrated. So if that's your plan, I don't think it's a very good plan.
So, again, he writes, here I am going to read, because this line's a whopper. Upon first glance, it's easy to assume the Patriots, not without a quarterback or cap space, must have chosen to enter a rebuild. Because, let's face it, most teams without a quarterback or cap space are rebuilding.
Right.
So you would figure that's what the Patriots are doing. Truthfully, he said, the motivation behind these moves is no different than any others made at one Patriot place. Winning. In 2019, he says, McCourty and Tooney represented the strengths of a Super Bowl contender that faded down the stretch due to injured weapons and waning quarterback play.
Ooh. I Tom was old and sucked at the end, and that's why we ended up in the situation we did.
That was highlighted, underlined, and stars.
Yeah.
So that was a triple Felgie right there.
Now, granted, Tom was not great in that game against the Dolphins at that horrible pick six. Again, how was the defense in that game that got shredded by Ryan Fitzpatrick?
And no mention of the defense there. So thanks to McCourty, Tooney, and the two strengths of the team, the secondary and the offensive line, that was a Super Bowl contender that faded down the stretch due to injured weapons and waning quarterback play. So we had the right weapons. They just got hurt. And the quarterback kind of tailed off. He writes, the Pats boasted the NFL's sharpest secondary all year.
Ugh.
And in the second half of the season, their top 10 offensive line, with left tackle Isaiah Wynn back in the fold, reached its peak. Six of the O-line's seven best pass-protecting performances occurred after November 1, according to Pro Football Focus. On these strengths, the Patriots have chosen to double down, rather than paper over their obvious weaknesses with a couple of overpriced replacement-level weapons via free agency. This is their plan. So the offensive line, which I thought kind of blew last year.
It did.
They didn't run the ball nearly as well, and it was largely because of what was going on up front. Thought Mason took a step back and Cannon sucked.
The right side of that line had issues all year long, and maybe that was injuries or decline in play or something, but both of those players were not as good as they were the year before.
But the Patriots believe, and I think Callahan is reflecting this, that once Isaiah Wynn got back and got in the flow, that even with the center situation being what it was, Karras and not Andrews, that their best play was at the end of the year. Brady was protected at the end of the year. And they had a wire-to-wire top secondary in the league. And that's how they contended last year, and that's how they're going to contend this year.
Surprised there's not lines in there. Any sacks that Brady took from any sacks that the waning quarterback took last year were on the waning quarterback. I'm surprised that line's not in that column from Bill.
So, I mean, that is a whopper. They faded down the stretch due to injured weapons and waning quarterback play. No mention of the defense that got torched by Fitzmagic and then got shredded, basically, by Ryan Tannehill and a running offense at Tennessee at home.
Got steamrolled.
No mention of that.
Henry in that game.
So the whole thing about investing in the middle of that offensive line, too, is sort of like I always thought the tackles were more important. Nope. Not, says Callahan. Callahan says stopping interior pressure is paramount in the modern game. See, this I just again, because I've been on all sides of this. I just this reeks to me of.
You're misinformed. We always thought it was tackles, but the modern game has changed how we think about the offensive line.
But it's like Bill or someone in football explaining the game to you. Stopping interior pressure is paramount in the modern game, particularly for offenses led by young quarterbacks. Edge rushers can generally be schemed away via chipping, cut blocking, double teams, rushing at them, running play action passes away from them, etc. The Patriots have neutralized edge rushers for years. Elite defensive tackles, on the other hand, are more difficult to counteract. Enter Tooney and center David Andrews and right guard Shaq Mason, all top 10 players at their respective positions. Provided Andrews returns and reports are positive, the Patriots could own the best pass-blocking interior in the league.
Again, that's assuming maybe that Shaq Mason actually gets back to where he was a few years ago because he was down last year. Do we know what David Andrews is going to be after being out last year with a serious medical condition? And is he comfortable coming back in this new world we live in because he might be more susceptible to catching coronavirus? Like, that's a real rosy outlook.
So
I thought, again, an overall position outside of Tooney last year mostly sucked.
So are they just justifying the fact that they have $25 million devoted to their two guards? That I think Maz have this in our show notes, that they have the fifth most expensive offensive line in football?
Yes.
Okay. And they still have a rookie, they have a left tackle on a rookie contract. And Andrews doesn't make big money, and they still have the fifth or sixth highest paid offensive line in football. So, all right, you're going to win on the offensive line. Great. And the interior is now more important than the edge, which, in fairness, I will say, I think there is some truth to. I have seen them over the years, over these 20 years, when they deal with that high-flying, big-name defensive end, don't they generally handle that guy?
Has J.J. Watt ever had a big play against the Patriots in his career?
So he does inside and outside. But when there's that one guy, they can generally handle him, whether he's inside or outside. I guess that's the... That's the point.
But they usually neutralize the name guy.
They do. But you know what? And I'm just going to self-correct myself. That doesn't matter whether they're inside or out. Like, they don't let J.J. Watt ruin the game. They don't let Jadeveon Clowney ruin the game. They don't let, Jason Taylor or Dwight Freeney, remember those guys? Like,
yeah.
They would get a sack a game, and then they'd put Dan Graham over there and double-team him, and they wouldn't ruin the game. They don't let one defensive lineman ruin the game. And I think that applies to tackle or guard. But talk about justifying big money spent at the guard position by saying in the modern game, it's now about blocking tackles, it's not about blocking defensive ends. Okay. All right. So let me ask you, is a good interior of the offensive line and a good secondary enough for this team to contend?
You're telling me that Stidham's the guy and you feel confident in him? I would have liked to have read that in that column. I'd feel better about it if that's the plan. If you're going to spend that kind of money in the offensive line, you're telling me you're going to protect this kid, then fine. But I didn't hear or read anything in there about by the way, this is our quarterback. Because it still feels like, we don't know what the quarterback's going to be.
That's true. I would say that. But that, again, to me is the money line. Why did they come up short last year? Injured weapons and waning quarterback play. Boom. Love it. Love that line. The Palace Q continues, even with Brady in Tampa. Your thoughts on everything right after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music.
Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Sometimes they're hot on the topic.
Yes!
No!
Yes!
No!
Yes!
Felger and Maz, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Second down.
That's a good defensive play.
And 10. There was a guy who wore number 21 for the Patriots with a saving interception in an end zone to our right several Super Bowls ago.
Now Goff,
three to the left, takes the snap. Harmon on a blitz. Goff throws it to the right. Gilmore's there. Yeah. Intercepted at the four. Harmon forced the pick, and Gilmore comes up with it. His second of the postseason.
What a call.
And possession of the Patriots.
What a call by Brian Flores. Pressure on number 16. You knew the kid was going to crack, and he did there. And what a play by Gilmore.
And we play that because, meanwhile, while the Herald is saying the secondary is the strength of the team, had him as a contender last year, and the Pats are building around it, Ben Volen in the Globe continues to say Stephon Gilmore might be traded. Maybe Volen's onto something. I don't know. He's kind of insistent about it. It's speculation. He's not sourcing it.
But I do feel like I heard more of that in like a 48-hour span, because Saturday with Chris and I, we took a call on it, and then Chris kind of expounded on like, oh, no, I've kind of heard that. And I was like, huh, what, trading Gilmore? And then Volen writes this column the next day. So I'm like, oh, is there a little, you know, smoke where there's smoke, there's fire type of thing with Gilmore? Are they thinking about actually trading this guy who is the face, I think, the face of the team right now, easily their best player on both sides of the ball.
Best player on the team, I would say that. And if this is how you're built to win, with your secondary and your offensive line, well, how do you trade your best player out of your secondary? Now, they need some cap space, but they don't need to trade their best player to do it. He might want a new contract because while his cap number is high, his real money is low. So his cap is too high for your liking, and his real money is too low for his liking. That's sort of that's a tough spot there. That's not what you're looking for. The opposite of the sweet spot. So the reason we play that is you wonder if Gilmore is on the block. And, well, furthermore, would you do it? Jalen Ramsey, who went from Jacksonville to the Rams last year, got two first round. The Jags got two first round picks from the Rams for that guy. Can you believe that?
Two firsts and a fourth.
Oh my God! So if someone offers you two firsts for Gilmore, then I think you'd have to listen to that. Okay, that's great return for a guy who only has 2 years of term left here, and maybe is not happy with his contract right now, and is going to be 30 this year. That's something you would do. I can't imagine he'd get two first-round picks at 30.
But if one of those teams this year, because you have a couple of teams in that first round that have multiple picks, the Dolphins and then the Vikings, who have two, like at the 22 and 26 or something like that, if they were willing to do it, yeah. I mean, but the precedent is set with Ramsey, and I think Gilmore's much better than Ramsey at this point, both on and off the field. So if someone was going to bowl you over with that, yes. Otherwise, for just one first-round pick, no.
Okay, so they need to trim it just a little bit of money to get their draft picks in.
Sanu, figure it out with Sanu, get rid of him. Okay. I know you gave up a second rounder for him last year. It didn't work. He sucked. Like, move on.
I'm not getting rid of him. I want him. I want to win some games this year and be as good as I can be. I think Sanu can play, and I think he's fine for you. Can you trim him? Can you restructure? Fine. I mean, I'll restructure all these guys. I'd love to get Tooney's number down. I don't want to pay $25 million to my guards. So I'd love to, you know, hammer out deals with Hightower and him and just sort of flatten out that money a little bit. But I'm not getting rid of anybody. I'm not dumping off this roster. I'm not rebuilding. And I've talked about that a lot. All right, to your phones, as promised. Brian in Plymouth. Hi, Brian.
Hey, gentlemen. I apologize. You guys stole my thunder, but especially with the salary cap numbers, which I think are laughable. I mean, you got $20 million in dead money between Brady, Antonio Brown, and $2 million still from Bennett. And then, like you said, Michael, $25 million between your two interior linemen. That's two of our top six highest players, interior linemen. And if you want to include Cannon, that's three of our top six O-line, our highest paid salaries are on the O-line, which, like you guys said, is suspect. And the fact that all these people are just writing in Isaiah Wynn as the next, you know, great franchise left tackle is laughable. He hasn't shown it. So I don't get it, but everybody, including the 10-2 show, loves him.
Well, so look, if those guys play to their ceiling, it's... You know,
yeah. My thing with Wynn, when he's healthy, he's been good. Can he stay healthy?
And that offensive line was worth the money the year before.
Absolutely, that's why they won the Super Bowl.
Ran over teams, right? And that offensive line was great. down the stretch. So if they play to that level, I don't mind them. You know, I don't mind two of the top six salaries being on the offensive line or at guard. I mean, if it's money well spent, it's money well spent. The problem is when Cannon looks the way he looked last year and Mason looks the way he looks last year and Andrews then gets hurt with some weird, like, that's the problem if you're not getting return on that. But if they want to go back, and you know me, I don't think it's, I think it's awful hard to run to win. But, you know, look, if that's the strength of your team, that's the strength of your team. It's, the problem is when you pay for it and then they suck.
Right.
That was the problem last year. Lars in Foxborough on the return of the NBA. Go ahead, Lars.
Hey, guys, thanks for taking my call. Listen, in hockey, there's very few players that are, that have got the coronavirus. That's, maybe it's because it's cold and they, you know, they don't really touch the puck much. In basketball, everybody's running like crazy. They're dripping sweat and breathing all over each other, rubbing shoulders, and they've all got it. So, I mean, I think basketball is the problem there. As far as the Callahan's thing there, Mike, ask him how many players were locked up last year and the year before and the year before. Maybe his number's right on. It's no different than any other time. That's all. Thanks for taking my call.
No, it was Bedard who had 49 of 53 spots, which I just think is strong.
Silly.
I just think it's high. I don't know how you have Ryan Izzo and what's the other guy? Matt Lacoste. Is like roster locked.
Right, you liked those tight ends last year?
So you can't draft a tight end because those guys are taking up those spots? Like, what are we? Smoking dope? What's going on? The first thing that he, what was the first thing the caller said?
NHL, NBA.
Adam Butler.
Okay, I do wonder, because there has been only a couple players in the NHL that have tested positive. Is there any sort of, I mean, this sounds so stupid, I don't want to say it out loud, because it's probably so stupid. Someone, a scientist or a doctor would laugh at you. But does the fact that it's in a rink make it more safe? I mean,
I thought it survived and really was at its most in the cold.
It's not cold. It's Maz has brought this point up, but apparently it has flourished along the same latitudinal line. Like if you look at
where it's arid, places like here in here, Seattle.
Yeah, but here, Seattle, Wuhan, Milan, like those are generally on the same. Is that latitude or longitude? Latitude.
Latitude.
And so there's some, there is a climate component to it, and is the fact that the hockey's in a rink. And you're freezing. Does
the
that
terms are like the ice?
Does it mitigate? I mean, I feel so stupid even bringing that up if there's nothing to that. And I think there's probably nothing to it. I think the NHL is going to have a harder challenge, much harder challenge, because the NBA, as goofy as this sounds, they literally could build a TV studio basketball arena in a conference room, banquet hall. What I really mean is a convention space.
Like where we do Radio Row for the Super Bowl.
Yes, they can do it in a convention space. Someone did bring up a ballroom in the Bahamas. Like they if they wanted to, they could. They could lay down the hardwood, build the lights, build a TV studio, and play the game in a convention space, ballroom, something like that. Airplane hangar. They can. And they've talked about this. Hockey needs a rink, and so like, they're not going to be as they won't be as flexible as the NBA in terms of where they stage it. But I think they should be looking to do the exact same thing. And so we keep saying, go to Moose Ball, Saskatchewan, some cute little junior rink, and it'll be a good TV set, a good, you know, a good pitcher, and play it there. If the NBA guys get to go to Vegas and the Bahamas, you go to Saskatchewan. Well,
yeah, there's got to be no shortage of those type of places in Canada.
Has to be. Wayne in Grafton. Hi, Wayne.
Yeah, hey. Guys, it's great. I can't talk about you know the whole thing. I mean, you know, we're all essential. You guys are essential. You know, I'm essential. I work at a package store, so you know, I know the product and I need the product. So I'm sitting here, you know, while sports is essential, and I'm waiting for my stimulus package while I work on my own stimulus package. Peace out.
Peace out. Wayne's stimulus pack. So he works at a packy. That makes perfect sense, doesn't it?
Yeah. And so, again, you know, we were saying, like, you didn't want to say it because you didn't want to sound stupid. But this, I fully believe. You know, one of the reasons that they are, granted, a packy told me this, someone that owns and operates a liquor store, but I fully believe this. One of the reasons that many governors throughout the United States are declaring them essential, if you were to shut them, you would overrun the hospitals with people that would end up with the DTs, those that actually, you know, have mm-hmm. alcohol issues. Like, mm-hmm. And I thought about it. I was like, Oh, that's genius. Yeah, they can't shut them down. Now, granted, those of us that are self-medicating with it on a nightly basis, like myself, you know, I'm glad that they are deemed essential. But those that unfortunately are addicts and need it, like, to survive, you can't shut those places down because you'll overrun the hospitals.
So there you go. Wayne, thanks for your service. We continue. After Murray's update, we got more on that bubble idea by the NBA, which I really do love. And Tom Brady solicits the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, not the other way around. Those two stories right after the update.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Felger and Mass.
Oh.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
It's the likelihood that when the NBA season does resume, it'll do so without fans.
Almost 100%. LeBron, if he wants to play for a championship this year, is going to have to reset his expectations. He also talked about how he didn't want to be sequestered with teammates and other teams, potentially in a centralized location. I don't know if that's definitely on the board, but it's definitely a possibility. Again, that's what China is looking at, is clustering teams in a bubble where they can be protected. That's what I think the league may have to do. And LeBron is a voice of the rest of the league. He is speaking with emotion in the way he sees it. But the reality is, if the NBA comes back, at least in the short term, it's going to be in empty arenas or even empty aircraft hangars where they put down a court, and it's probably going to be in a centralized location where the players can be sequestered. And that is just something that players are going to have to start getting their minds around.
Again, I think it's wild. Wild. I hope it happens. I hope they keep pushing. I hope they figure it out. I hope they can do it safely. And they finish the season in a completely unique, weird sort of setting. And I hope they, again, make it for the NBA championship, the Larry O'Brien trophy, etc. That's the trophy, right?
Yeah.
You know, I don't want it to be a side tournament, a different tournament, a made-up. No. For the title. And it has to be played in an airplane hangar. Whatever. I think that's fine. They're taking the lead of the Chinese Basketball Association, which has been trying to do this now for a while, and they keep pushing it back because they can't quite figure it out, or it's not quite safe, or the government steps in at the last minute. The CBA, Chinese Basketball Association, was supposed to resume first week of April. Then it was moved to April 15th. Now the restart has been delayed to late April or early May. They haven't formalized a plan, but multiple sources said, what has been drawn up includes clustering teams in one or two cities and playing one another in a round-robin format in empty arenas over several weeks. The goal has been to play out the remaining schedule in full before moving on to the playoffs with the hope that fans could eventually be admitted. The CBA has discussed playing in a city in a warmer southern region that hasn't seen the same volume of cases as other areas. Another option has been a coastal city in northeast China that typically receives many travelers from Japan and South Korea and has developed effective quarantine strategies. Teams would live and play in a constantly monitored environment with players' temperatures checked several times a day. If the CBA plan, the Chinese plan, were to unfold without incident, it could be a strategy the NBA considers among other options. Ideally, NBA teams would be able to train in their facilities and play in their arenas, but in the near term, that might be impossible, especially with escalating health concerns gripping the nation. The NBA could look at venues in a centralized location, perhaps playing in non-NBA cities. And again, I'm just going to read this again because I love it. Windhorse writes, again, this is Brian Windhorse on ESPN, various ideas have been floated by players and executives. One is to consider using a sprawling casino property in Las Vegas where everything could be held under one roof. Let me just stop there. Like, that feels like such an automatic.
Yeah.
There has to be these,
time to start sterilizing now. All those places are closed.
Those hotels must have massive convention room,
mm-hmm.
massive convention space. All you need is one to create a basketball TV studio. And so all the players are quarantined in that hotel, that facility. Open up the grounds if you want. Sit out by the pool, whatever, but you can't leave the grounds. Maybe you can open it up to a family member or two. They can get their, conjugal visits, whatever the case may be.
Because I would think the family aspect would be a sticking point for a lot of players. Like, I don't want to leave them alone, and this is still going on.
Right, I don't want to leave my family for 2 months during the coronavirus. Like, I get it. Like, I respect that, if you don't want to do that. So, well, anyway, so, like, Vegas, that feels like a natural. Others have suggested playing in the Bahamas, where a ballroom could be converted into a playing court specifically for broadcast. There's even been talk of taking over college campus in the Midwest, where reported cases of COVID-19 are lower for the moment. Whatever the location, it would be a place where teams could sleep, train, eat, and hopefully be kept healthy enough to have confidence in resuming play. Maybe not finish out the season, but at least get restarted. So, again, I think their hope is to ultimately move into arenas and have fans. You know, one step at a time. See if you can pull this thing off.
Yeah, at least you're trying, and that's what I want. And it hasn't gone to plan so far with that Chinese basketball league. But again, they're trying. I think right now, and again, I don't damn Kevin Paul DuPont for what he wrote. I just disagree with it, is all. He's entitled to his opinion, because right now, when it comes to these leagues, patience and optimism is what we need. You just don't tank it now just because things are dire and it's horrible. And I certainly disagree with the fact that we should be focusing 18 hours a day on nothing but hard news. Hard news is going to drive you crazy right now.
The players have to sign off, though. The players, you know, a lot of players, LeBron most notably, have expressed no interest in playing in front of empty arenas or being quarantined, but they're going to have a choice. Do you want to compete for the NBA championship or not? Do you want your salary or not? Like, those things are going to be on the board. How about your money next year? Because all the lost revenue this year is going to spill into next year. And it's going to take the payrolls down, take salaries down, cost people jobs. Never mind, regular people, players. And so that's all got to be factored in. If you're not going to show up and play, then, you know, that's fine. I respect it. You don't want to leave your family, or you don't want to be quarantined. You don't want to go to Omaha, Nebraska. No problem. I just know you're
going to take a financial hit.
You ain't going to get paid.
Yeah.
And you ain't. And
in LeBron's case, he might take a legacy hit, too, because, you know, your team was playing the best before everything got shut down, and it looked like the Lakers were the favorite to win the title.
It was all there for LeBron to bring a championship to Los Angeles. If I'm LeBron, I'm doing everything I can to play those games. Everything I can. Jeff Van Gundy thinks there's no chance they play. He said late last week, "I have to say I'm completely pessimistic about the NBA taking place once again for a long period of time," he said. He said, "The NBA, the NHL, Major League Baseball, those will not take place. And I don't think football, college, or the NFL will start on time. Because until we start developing a herd immunity to it, we've come up with a protocol to treat it, or a vaccine becomes available, I don't see games being played." He said, let's just say NBA basketball, at the most optimistic, starts July 1. What are we going to do because the virus is not eradicated by then? What are we going to do when the first player, coach, referee comes down with it? Are we going to cancel like Japan just did? They had a couple of guys get fevers, and the fear factors shut the league down again. What's the NBA going to do? So he raises a good point. I would just say, why not try in the first, see what happens.
Yeah, let's be patient. Let's see what it's like a month from now. And if it's not, you know, feasible in a month from now, again, 2 months from now. We're not looking to have this thing start up in mid-May. I thought that Mark Cuban, the owner of the Mavericks, was premature last week in saying, you know, June 1 is what we're looking at, and I have before that. Like, all right. But August, September, I'd like to think, trying to be optimistic here, that that's still feasible. So can we wait and see?
I keep saying, just keep pushing forward, keep trying to get it done, and if it can't get done, if it's not safe enough, if it's just not feasible, if there's too many hoops, then there's too many hoops. The players don't sign off. They don't sign off. And then we can't do it. But I would hate to say, no, that's it. We're not going to do it. And then, you know, by some miracle or not, by science, by some really smart people come up with something that can mitigate the damage or allow it to take place. If that comes up in the next couple months and you have a window there to complete these seasons, I would hate to think that you've already shut them down.
Right. There's a breakthrough and you realize we could have done it.
Meanwhile, okay, so that's just one thing I'm interested in. Here's the other thing. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers GM, Jason Light, went on ESPN today, and it's about a 90-second cut, but in here you're going to hear how Tom Brady pitched them as much as they pitched him. Here's that site from Jason Light.
You know, it's 2 weeks ago today that, you know, the legal tampering or the negotiation period started when we made the first call to his agent, and it seems like 2 months ago now, but when we made the first call at 12 o'clock, and he said, "You made a good decision to call. We knew that we might have a very good chance of getting him."
And just take us through it from there, as much as you can tell us about how that process worked.
Well, we spent a lot of time this offseason, as soon as the season ended, meeting, evaluating every quarterback, every player, like we always do, but especially quarterbacks that we thought, you know, that could be potential UFAs. Coaches, my scouts, did an in-depth, very detailed work on all of them and planning on all of them, which one of them could potentially help us and upgrade us at the position. And Bruce made it clear in some interviews that Tom Brady was one, and we did not leave Jameis Winston out of the plan. As soon as Wednesday rolled around and we were able to talk to Tom Brady, we had a great conversation, Bruce and I. We talked to him for over an hour and a half, and he made it clear in the conversation that he was very, very interested. It was almost like a recruitment on his part, telling us why it would make sense for him to come to Tampa Bay. And the following day, we signed him, but it was at that phone call that we realized that we felt like, you know, we had him.
So I think the moral of the story here is how badly Brady wanted this job.
Yeah. Typically, with free agency, it's the teams going after the player. It's the player shaking the ass of the teams, like, ooh, I need some of that, say the teams. Instead, the player, Tom Brady, saying, hey, guys, throw me a raft here, a life raft. I need to get the hell out of here. I'm desperate. I know there's some interest, but please make it happen.
And, you know, even though that first line, I didn't catch it the first time, on noon on Tuesday when the agent called, or I'm sorry, they did call Don Yee. When we called the agent noon on Tuesday, he said, good thing you called. You got a real chance. You know what that means? What Don Yee said to him? He said, guys, Tom's dying to get out of there. Just make him an offer. He's gone. He's yours. Like, I mean, wasn't it clear from that line? It's like, we knew when we called him on noon, called him at noon on Tuesday, and he said, you made a good choice. We knew we had a chance. Good thing you called. Good thing you called, said Yee. He's dying to get out of there. And then when they talked to Brady on Wednesday, it's like he was recruiting us, not the other way around. It shows you how badly Brady wanted out of here.
And that's got to be a tough pill to swallow for some Patriots fans. You hear that, and it's like, oh
Jesus.
He hated it here at the end, or at least was so done with Bill that he couldn't wait to get the hell out of here, that he was calling the Bucks and also saying, like, guys, yeah, I'm available. Come on, make the offer. Doesn't even have to be that much. I'm out.
I mean, that's my read of it. Like, yeah. He was any legitimate offer. He was just looking for any legitimate offer to have him save face so he could get out of here. And he got it. And maybe by the end, when he got to Tampa, he knew that's all he had. So he had to pitch them and make sure that they were on the hook.
A low-rent, irrelevant franchise that's won one Super Bowl and has the losingest record in the history of professional sports. He was desperate to go to them.
That's crazy.
Okay.
There's that item. I don't want to leave Steve hanging. Steve in Portland's been waiting patiently. Steve, what do you got?
Well, we got a impending Blanami on the horizon, and it'll probably be next year when the Patriots get a third-round compensatory pick for Brady. You know, then they'll go ahead and spin that into a 4 and 2 6s, package that for a 2, draft a god. You know how that's going to go.
But what's the Blanami? Who's blowing who?
Well, people are going to call you and say, well, for Brady's third-round compensatory pick, you know, we're going to, you know how they like to trade that into like a 4th and 2 6s? Well, sure. Or whatever.
Fans love their comp picks, Steve. Thanks for the call.
And they have the most this year.
Yep, yeah. They love the comp. Yeah. Someone emailed Maz when they lost Brady. They said, well, they used a 6th on Brady and got a 3rd in return. Typical Patriots value system. People actually think of it like that.
Yeah.
They do. Final word is going to come your way next. Felger and Maz have been submitted a reentry money. It's been brought to you by East Boston Savings Bank. Do you have another read on that, by
the
way?
Yeah, that's right.
Murray, with that info, then the final word.
Reentry Monday is presented by East Boston Savings Bank. If you're looking to finance a home mortgage or commercial real estate property, or simply looking for a free checking account, visit ebsb.com. East Boston Savings Bank. They're getting it done since 1848.
Felger and Maz.
Sports. Boston's home for sports. 98.5. The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Felger's expert analysis.
Not from this talk radio crazy.
Maz's hard-hitting questions.
What am I, like the freaking abrasive police here?
The caller's bringing knowledge to the table.
Maz, the adults are talking.
It's time to recap this four-hour show in 4 minutes. It's the final word on Felger and Maz on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
And the final word is brought to you by Town Fair Tire. If you are looking for the best deal on tires, here's only one place to go. That would be Town Fair Tire. The best prices and great free services. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. All right. Jeez. Oh, boy. For the final word today, seeing as we...
Don't you hate it every time?
Every single thing that happens.
Every tickle in my throat.
Okay, it was either on the air or off. I forget, but you said you have a bottle of wine, you have a few glasses, the next thing you wake up, you're like...
Oh, my God.
Head hurts. Oh, no. Ears are ringing. Ah, I got it.
Dry throat, headache, like...
And it's been...
Or I did have a bottle of wine last night.
Tell you what, it's been a lot of wine in the Murray Dome. And so every morning is like that. Like, I got the Rona. No, just hungover. Anyway, for the
Red wine makes the world a better place.
Temporarily, Jimmy. Then you wake up and you realize, oh, everything's still terrible. So for the final word today, seeing as we replayed the sound of yours truly losing it down in Atlanta during the overtime of Bruins-Leafs Game 7 in 2013, I thought we'd replay Hardy's Fuppets to the very same thing.
Love it.
To wrap things up.
Well, I'm sailing.
The Bruins-Toronto game in overtime going on in the background here. This is everything good about sports. You don't necessarily have to be a fan of either of these teams. If you just like sports, it's going to be a little bit difficult for me to do the show and pay attention to this game at the same time. Easy thing for me to do is start off the show tonight and throwing out the question that I'm sure has been asked by just about every single sports radio show throughout the nation today.
Yeah! Yeah, motherfucker!
Suck it! Wow!
Yeah! Yeah!
Woo!
Is she talking dirty?
Oh, I want to swear so bad. Yeah, James Russ! suck it, you bum! it was a fun night and a fun moment. Remember fun nights and fun moments? Those were good.
I think, was that one of the first Fuppets we ever did?
I believe it was, yeah.
It was close. Close to it.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task. But after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.